Today is Saturday. Well, or Shabbat, as we say it in Hebrew, or as the Bible states it, to be. So, the day of rest for everybody, but not to me. I had to travel not too far from Green Bay. But anyway, comparing to what I had to do through this tour, I am here for a little over 10 days, and I covered more than 2,000 miles already. So, let's consider it to be the Shabbat distance to travel. Anyway, I'm glad to be here today, and I'm glad for another opportunity to share with you what God has done in my and my family's lives through these years. I'm a believer for, I think, 18 years or so by now. And I'm going to tell you this story, how it came to the point that the Jewish boy who was born in eastern Ukraine, former Soviet Union, by the way, when you, I guess many of you got the chance to get this brochure, and this brochure also contains little short version of my testimony, and said that Eugene was born in FSU, which stands for former Soviet Union, not Florida State University. And how I ended up standing in front of you representing the really old, in fact, one of the oldest American-based mission boards to the Jewish people and serving the Lord in Jerusalem. Okay, let's start. We have 45 minutes, so let's say we should be done by 3 o'clock with this part. I was born in Ukraine. Was it? It called then Ukraine, yes, but it was the part of much bigger country, so we even didn't really care about speaking Ukrainian language in that part of the country. Well, actually, I am a city boy. I'm not a farm boy. I grew up in the city, which was almost 2 million, had about 2 million people of population. Well, comparing to your town, it's a little more. You know, I really enjoyed it. I'm turning like, how do you pronounce it? Adel? Adel. Well, you turn Adel, population of 516. Loud, this kind of, you know, that's cool, you know, that's nice. It's silent. Well, I grew up in a Jewish home without any understanding what does it mean to be Jewish. Believe it or not, we didn't care about Jewishness or about God. Well, what makes the Jewish person to be Jewish? Well, at least as we believe today, that Judaism, that's the religion, or faith in God of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob, which is supposed to be a little closer to the right thing. Well, I do believe that what makes the Jew is his DNA, if you want. That's supposed to be the physical descendant of Abraham through Isaac and Jacob, who turned to be Israel. We'll talk about that later today in the second part of this blog. I mean, the Jewish person is one of the sons of Israel, and Israel is Jacob, and Jacob is son of Isaac, and Isaac is son of Abraham, and what makes them into some particular line, particular block of humankind is the covenant, Abrahamic covenant. But it's later. Well, I was born a descendant of Abraham through Isaac and Jacob. You know, I'm not sure I can to follow like then to my father and my mother how it happened like that I got there. But anyway, I was Jewish. Did I believe in God? No. Did my dad believe in God? No. My mom? No. Neither of us. Did we care about Judaism? Well, at least a little bit. We knew that during the Passover, we need to eat matzah, or matzah, as they say. Yeah. So, it was Soviet Union under the Brezhnev's regime yet. So, it was not really easy to get it. You know, the synagogues were in big cities like, you know, central cities like Moscow and Leningrad, St. Petersburg now. But in our city, we had a huge building for synagogue, which was changed into the gym, basically. So, and we had some underground Jewish community, you know, who were practicing Judaism. They were meeting for like fellowship and holidays, but they were all on the list with KGB, so we had no interest to get on that list anyhow close. So, but we were contacting like these people, getting this matzah, you know, we're eating matzah during the Passover week, and I am not sure today, I'm not sure that it happened really, but I wouldn't be surprised if it did happen, that we used the matzah bread to make ham sandwiches. That's to tell you how Jewish we were. We didn't care about anything. My dad, by the way, still doesn't really care about God. Anyway, but somewhere deep in my heart, I got this question. Well, I'm Jewish. What does it mean? Well, we are chosen people. So that's, you know, we've heard about it from different, you know, people here and there. But what does it mean? Some believe that because we were smarter than others. Well, some of us were smart, but I had an honor to know others who were not as smart. Some were richer than others, but my family was not extensively rich anyhow, you know, and sometimes we even struggled. You know, so what did it mean to be chosen? By what means? And somewhere deep in my heart, I got probably the right idea that I need to turn to the Bible to figure out the roots. But where I could get the Bible, you know, they didn't sell it in the stores. We didn't have, like, Lifeway, you know, Bible stores anywhere. So where am I going to get the Bible? In the church. You know, but I knew that I am Jew. I have nothing to do with the church. I didn't go to the church. Missionaries. Oh, of course. No, we didn't have any missionaries. We probably had some, but they were so underground, and they were in connection with the local, like Baptist, Pentecostal, whatever, believers, which I know that they were there. But then I had no idea, and I had no even desire to figure it out. In fact, I remember just before the army, I was working after school before the army. I didn't go to the university. I was lazy, you know. I started to work, and I was working. I was doing really Jewish work of stitching stuff together and making like jackets, winter jackets, and pants, and all of this stuff. And one guy at the place I was working, I remember when I just came there, I was new. You know, I didn't know anything, and I didn't care much, by the way. But the manager told me, like, kind of secretly, you know that guy? He's a Baptist. And I had no idea what does it mean to be Baptist. I felt something like, oh, should I stay away from him or something like that. So anyway, that's who I was. And just, you know, after the army, you know, perestroika, I was done with this 2 years service in the Soviet army. You know, you've seen this old movies with like guys with a red star on their foreheads, you know, I mean like on the heads, you know, I had one. And then Gorbachev opened the doors of the country, and it has become possible to us to leave. Where are we going to leave? Well, everybody who left that country were living by the Israeli invitation. So all of these nice Christians who have no connections to the Jewish religion or heritage and reside here in Wisconsin in the rest of your beautiful country, they all left by Israeli visa. That was sort of an agreement between the Soviet Union and, you know, your country, Israel. But anyway, my dad and I, we lived separately. He had his own family. I lived with my mom. We got visas to Israel. And I remember being really happy about it. I came to him and said, like, well, now on, let's get packing our stuff. That was not the visa, it was an invitation still. So I'm going to proceed this invitation. I want to go to Israel. And my dad said, well, son, just wait for a bit. There are rumors that Germany will open their doors soon for the immigration of the Jewish people from the Soviet Union. And I remember looking at him like kind of like that. I'm a Jew. I don't want to go to Germany. I think I should go to Israel. I have no idea how it came into my mind. But I was a Zionist, in a sense. I didn't know a bit about the country I'm planning to go to. I just felt that I have to go there. So I proceeded with the process, you know, like filling applications and everything. And I remember standing in huge line to the Israeli consulate in Moscow to get you an idea. When I came there, I was 1,013th. Because that was end of year 1990, the second year of, you know, opening the doors to the almost four years period, million Jewish people from the Soviet Union left to Israel, and even more got to your country, to Australia, to Europe, whatever. So I'm coming to the Israeli consulate, not embassy yet. We didn't have then like tight connections, and I'm standing in this line waiting for, I think it was 3 days or something, and then few foreigners came with the big boxes. And how did I know that they were foreigners? Because probably the only word they could speak in Russian with their accent for free. So they brought these big boxes, opened them, and said, for free. And I mean, like, for free, that's nice. So I proceeded to grab my free stuff, and it turned out to be the Bible. And I thought, yes, now I'm going to finally to figure out what does it mean to be Jewish. And when I returned to the place I was staying, the first thing I did, I took the metal clip, and I found in the Bible where the New Testament begins, and I closed the New Testament. Just made it like block and closed it. Just not to read from it accidentally. Why did I do that? Who taught me to do this? Nobody. Neither my mom nor my dad, nor my friends. We didn't care. But somewhere deep in my heart, according to this nice heritage of Jewish-Christian relationships through the ages, I knew that the New Testament is not for me. I expected it to be, in fact, the kind of manual of practical Judaism. Well, I mean, anti-Semitism. So, but I started to read the Old Testament, and I did it regularly, even the book of Numbers. You know, I was reading from the beginning. I began reading back in Russia, in Soviet Union. It took some time, so I finished reading this book while being in Israel, living in Tel Aviv. While in Tel Aviv, I accidentally ran into a friend whom we were studying together at school. You know, he was not a Jewish guy, but his wife was Jewish. He also immigrated, surprise, met, started to fellowship. Turned out that he was interested in the Bible as well. So we were communicating a lot about the Bible, arguing. I sort of remember a few things I was telling then, but I don't want to share it with you because it was not very smart, let's put it this way. One day, together with his family, I was alone. I was about 25 years old, I guess. A little bit younger, maybe. We went to Jerusalem. We lived in Tel Aviv. We traveled to Jerusalem. And we went all around the old city. We even got up to the Temple Mount, which is not really encouraged or even possible these days for the Jews. And then we got down from the Temple Mount to the street, like of the old city. You know, you have the pavements, old buildings, and everything. And, you know, sometimes on some buildings you have little signs in many languages that at this building the Virgin Mary was born, which is Volkswagen, you know, whatever. How do you know who put the sign? And, well, this building is little younger than at least 2,000 years, like she was a little older 2,000 years ago. So, like, what's, you know, a tourist business? Well, anyway. But the signs on the street were Via Dolorosa. And I was, I guess, knowledgeable, at least if not smart, knowledgeable enough to know that Via Dolorosa, that was the road on which Jesus Christ, let's put it this way with my Russian R, you know, Jesus Christ was walking somewhere. No, to Golgotha, okay? Did I really care about it? Not really. But what I did care, that it was so historical. Well, I didn't believe in Jesus to be anybody more than human being. But I did consider him to be historical person who lived in Israel, who taught. No, he was Jewish, definitely. He was teaching the Jewish people here around. And whatever happened with his teaching, whatever he meant when he was teaching what he was teaching, he actually was able to, his teaching was overturning the course of the human history. Like, people started wars and peace, you know, with his name, you know, for 2,000 years. I thought, like, wow, he was whatever, good or bad, but he was really great. And at this point, we were walking, as I believed, at the same stones he was walking to this Golgotha, whatever he wanted to do there. And I didn't care while he was walking there. And I didn't care even about him. I was more interested in the stones and the feeling that we are in such a historic place. But I mentioned him. I remember telling to my friend, do you understand that we are right now standing at the same stones, well, no, but at the same stones, as I believe, on which such a great leader of humanity was walking 2,000 years ago, 2 millennia. Wow. And I don't remember what my friend answered, because I suddenly got this kind of matrix experience. When you go and then something just moving around you, and you're sort of there, but you know, neither people around you get what's going on inside of you, and you don't care what's going on there, you in your own realm. And while being there on Via Dolorosa, I suddenly felt that somebody loves me. That's the only way I could explain that feeling, which suddenly felt me from kind of above. And maybe if the balloon may feel somehow when it's felt with helium, that was probably the same feeling. I just, like, I felt that I can fly. You know, that was totally different feeling, like, of anything I ever experienced in my life. And I was totally sure that this was supernatural love. And don't ask me how I just got it. That was, you know, so overwhelmingly clear to me that somebody loves me to the point I never could imagine before. But considering myself to be the smart person, I immediately started to make the logical chain, if you want. Okay, I'm experiencing something really supernatural. I just read the Bible, the Old Testament, and I know about two supernatural powers, God and Satan. According to that source, Satan is the source of hatred, and God is the source of love. Since I'm experiencing love right now, therefore I experience love of God. It took a little segment of a second to get to this brilliant conclusion, and then when I got to it in my heart, not in my with my ears, not with my eyes, didn't see, didn't hear anything, in my heart, but really clearly, in Russian, that's really interesting, in Russian, I heard, felt words. Stop wasting your time and your words. Do you see how I love you? Turn around and follow me. And, well, I'm 25 years old, sort of wild, young, Jewish, single man who didn't care about God more than just to open the mouth and make myself smart in front of others, talking about him, knowing that, well, I have read the Bible, I have an opinion. And then suddenly I figure out that God, about whom I read and I explained him some power somewhere there, whatever it meant, is a real person. He is alive. He just spoke to me. He showed me how he loves me. He has a will for my life. And it was already super shocking to me. But in addition to all of this, probably the same way you can be sure, like if you would decide to run in the totally dark room, and then you suddenly meet the wall. The wall. No, just, you know, you may be as, you know, postmodern about it, but, you know, it hurts. No, it was the wall. You have nothing to, you know, argue. So the same way, like, hello, get the fact. I knew the same second that the name of this God is Jesus Christ. So it kind of shaked me a bit. And, you know, I was flying over the surface of this earth till the rest of the day. We came back home. And the first thing I did, I opened the New Testament and I started to read from the New Testament. By the way, which starts with the words, this is the genealogy of Jesus Christ, the son of David, the son of Abraham, and, well, if you don't know, the word Christ, actually, the Messiah, somebody whom the Jewish people know and wait, well, no, don't know, but wait till now. And I was sort of astonished by this kind of message, but I started to read, and I was reading pretty fast, and in a few weeks, I was done with the New Testament. I am not sure that I understood everything, but I clearly understood that it has nothing to do with anti-Semitism, that it was written, if not totally, but mostly, then mostly by the Jews, with the only probably one exception of Luke, who, if he was not a Jew, he was a proselyte, the Gentile who turned into the Judaism before he became a believer. Then it was written in many cases to the Jews, and in totality, all of these writings were about the Jewish Messiah. And I remember the thought, okay, maybe, wow, I don't know all of this and all about it, but if people will live today with the teaching of that Jesus, it would be really good to live these days on this planet. But make sure Satan didn't want me to go as easy away. So, and I got really practical thought. Well, Satan usually is pretty practical guy. He doesn't give you real kind of supernatural ideas. Well, at least not to me. He gave me short question. Did you drink enough that day in Jerusalem? You know, summer, hot weather, you know, voices, feelings, you know, love of God. I mean, a little weird. Did you drink enough water? Maybe it was just a little dehydrated. Well, and, you know, it's pretty kind of refreshing thought, you know, hey, wait a second, you know, before I started to talk to everybody about it. And I was thinking about it more and more, and somehow I started to get cooled down in my feelings, in my memories. But then, in my heart, I started to get like weird feeling. You need to read the Bible. And I was sort of arguing with myself, but I don't want to read the Bible anymore. I read the Bible. That's fine, but you need to keep reading it. But there are much, like many other spiritual literature, like, you know, Quran, for example, or Bhagavad Gita. I was pretty open-minded. Or whatever literature you can find on a spiritual matter. So how about reading this stuff? Because I want to know God, whatever he is, if he is, as he is, you know, from wide perspectives. But no, need to read the Bible. But that's boring. But you need to read the Bible. And I was arguing with myself in the beginning. Then I just was getting into idea, or maybe I'm arguing with this divinity or whatever, this superpower or whoever it is. And I remember at some point I said, okay, if you want me to read the Bible, just forget, I don't going to read it from the beginning, you know, just know. But you tell me where I'm going to, you show me where you want me to read the Bible. And I opened this way my Bible, and that edition of the Russian Bible I had. The page started from the last verses of the chapter 52 of the book of Isaiah and continued to the chapter 53 of Isaiah. The suffering servant prophecy. And I read it, and I couldn't believe myself. It's about Jesus. And I thought, like, how could it be? I just read through it, you know, a few months ago, and I didn't, I kind of missed it. And I read it again and again. It was about Jesus. You know, I know the history. Everybody knows history. So, what, like, this history, like, what's going on? How my people cannot get it? So I was closing my Bible, thinking about it for a few more days, and then getting back to my sort of real life, and then getting this feeling again, read the Bible, read the Bible. I don't want to read the Bible, but you need to read the Bible. But I read the Bible. But again, try it again. No, I don't want to. Like, okay, fine, you show me. Second time I opened my Bible, it was Micah 5. And you, Bethlehem Ephrata, from you will be born to me the one who will pasture the nations with the iron rod, or something like that. So, like, Bethlehem, well, from the context, it's all about messianic king of God whom he is going to send. And Bethlehem, you know, Jesus was born in Bethlehem. What's going on? Like, to make the story short, it took more than a year for me to open this Bible this smart way. By the way, younger generation, like, please don't take it, like, too much into consideration. That's most stupid way to study your Bibles. So, but God, in his love and wisdom, he used my stupidity in order to bring me to him. So every time I was opening my Bible after fighting with myself, or with him actually, and doing it this stupid way, he was showing me the messianic prophecy every single time. There was no one time when I opened the Bible and spoke about something else but the Messiah. So then I got a brilliant idea. That's the Russian Bible, which contains the New Testament. So probably the Christians rewrote the Old Testament the way it will prove that Jesus is the Messiah. And I was so happy about that, I finally got an idea, a solution to this problem. And it was Friday afternoon. I was getting back home. I grabbed the big end of the week Russian like newspaper, Israeli newspaper in Russian, and I got home. So a little prehistory. While being in serving in the Soviet Army, I was a dog trainer. So the army dogs. So I knew a little bit how to train the dogs. And while in Israel, I got a puppy, the Doberman. You know this, like, nice jumping black, you know, sharp teeth guys. You know, that was actually a girl. But anyway, she grew up just a little bit. Well, who can transfer between kilograms and pounds? So she was about 80 pounds, I guess. So she was kind of big lady. So, and she was so well trained. You know, I did my best. She was the best trained dog I ever trained in my life. When she was young, she kind of got, you know, a few pairs of shoes got into her attention. And then I had to deal with her the Russian army way, so she learned that, you know, no, don't do it anymore. And that's it. She never damaged no furniture, no shoes, but she never touched any books in her life. For some reason, I don't know why, even being a puppy. This day, Friday afternoon, when I got to this brilliant idea that, okay, so that's Russians, they try, like, you know, that's Russian Christian tricks. So I got home, opened the door to find out that my dog decided to read my Bible that day. It was all around the place. And I was upset. I sort of kind of got into this pace of, like, reading the Bible. Even if I don't read it, I don't want to read it. I can't do it whenever I'm in the mood. So, and I was really upset, and I sat down and I took this Russian newspaper, and, like, end of the week edition, and I read through it, you know, thinking, okay, life is too bad. And when I got to this newspaper, to the last page, it was a big article, which I read also. And it was something about, you know, like, weird kind of group that they were writing something about politics and biblical prophecies and whatever they were writing about. But at the end, they had a little coupon. They said, if you are willing to get your free copy of the Bible in Russian or in Hebrew, just contact us. So next week, I was a happy owner of the new Russian Bible, like Bible in Russian, and the new Bible in Hebrew. And I immediately checked the same passages, like Isaiah 53, and they were all the same. But then I got to another brilliant idea that, wait a second, this Bible in Hebrew contains the New Testament as well. So probably these covert Christians, they even changed the text, the Hebrew text, the text of the Hebrew Bible in order it will prove Jesus. So, as in My Big Fat Greek Wedding, there you go. So, but I think it was about in few weeks from then, I was called to the service in Israel Army for the first time. So I didn't have to serve there for a few years because I already spent 2 years in the Soviet Army, but I had to be there for 4 months to get some combat training. And of course I had to take a pledge. And when you take a pledge in Israeli Army, they call you to the table, you come, you grab your gun, and you grab the Bible, Tanakh, the Old Testament. And then you return to your line. And that was totally kosher Bible. It was distributed in the Jewish army. It was blessed by the Jewish army rabbi, by the different branches of the army rabbis. You could see the stamps. It was totally kosher. So the first thing I did, I thought, now I will find the truth. When we got released, I got into my tent and I opened Isaiah 53 and I read through it to realize that it was all the same. It spoke about, it had the same meaning that Russian Bible and the Hebrew Bible with the New Testament had. And I thought, okay, so now I should be sure that was not about dehydration. That really what I felt, that really what I heard. And now I know that God is, He loves me, He wants me to follow Him. And His name is Jesus. So I started to pray to Jesus and try to live my life the way that it will please Him. To find out that I started to commit such things which I would never even think about because of my morals while being complete, total unbeliever. And doing something really bad, really wrong, I was feeling kind of sick for few days afterwards, kind of laying down thinking, what did I do? Why did I do? Didn't I know that I shouldn't do that? Why did I do that? And then slowly getting back to normal, again trying to get into praying relationship with the Lord, sort of. And then I was on my way back to Ukraine to visit my friends. And while in Ukraine, the second day I was there, I committed something about which Bible is pretty clear. People who do such things, their destiny in the lake of fire. And I knew that I shouldn't do that. And I even was vocal about not doing what I was about to do, but I did it anyway. And afterwards, after all the excitement, calmed down, I thought, okay, that's it. You got it. And the next morning, I was leaving to visit my father in Germany because he already moved to Germany from Ukraine. He wanted, he got it. So, and I remember sitting in a small hotel room in some really small Ukrainian city, like hole upon the hole, I would say. And I was sitting in this hotel room, opened my Bible, kind of pretending to read it, and my thoughts were about the lake of fire. And I thought, that's it. I could tell you that I almost visualized these flames, which were sort of welcoming me. And I didn't really want to get there. And I don't remember how it happened. But I knelt down in the middle of this room. And I started to talk to Jesus. And I said, Jesus, you know that I am trying my best, but for some reason I can't. I don't know if you hear me now, if it's possible for you to hear me now, or is it possible to forgive me at this point, I have no idea. But if there's a little chance to forgive me now, please forgive me. And I said, please, you come into my life and help me to live every day of my life the way it will bring glory to you. Nobody taught me this prayer. I thought that I'm the only Jewish person who believes in Jesus in the world. I didn't care about presence of other Christians. They were somehow getting different highways with me. So, but at this point, that's how Holy Spirit put in my heart this prayer. And then I invited Jesus in my life. And I didn't know even if he heard me or forgave me. So I said, can you give me a sign? If it worked, let me cry. Because I was and sort of still is really tough on crying. And the next second, I was crying as a newborn baby. And actually I was one, in a sense. Starting the next morning, my life started to change. I started sort of looking at myself from aside. I became more calmed down, if you want. I started to think what I'm saying, what I'm doing, how I'm doing. My conclusions were different. And more than that, I started to meet people who claimed that they believe in Jesus. Accidentally, everywhere. It ended up when I knocked into the door of the library of the Evangelical Baptist Christians in my city where I was born and I was visiting then in Ukraine. And I got into this library and a young sister wearing some covering her head. Russian Baptists are pretty conservative. She came to me and she greeted me some weird way. The Russian Baptists and Pentecostal believers, they developed some particular way to greet each other because of the Soviet persecution. So they were saying greetings the really weird way. It was Russian word, but it was not used in Russian. It was kind of awkward. And they were saying this greeting, and you had to answer the same way. This way they knew that you are, one of them. But I had no idea about it. And she came in and greeted me this way, and I said, hi. And, if some of you will kind of say that even today my faith is not just really shy person or something back then, right after becoming a believer, I was a little bit worse than I am now, if you want. So, and she sort of figured out that I probably was sent by somebody to find some information, whatever. And she asked me, why did you come here? I said, I believe in Jesus. I am an Israeli. I'm visiting here. I see the sign. I thought what would be wrong for me to get into the library? And maybe I can get some stuff to read. And she said, why didn't you go to your own? And I'm just like, what do you mean, my own? She said, we have a group of the Jewish people in this city so who believe in Jesus. Why didn't you visit them first? I said, give me their contacts and I will go there. And she gladly gave me their contacts. I'm really hesitant that she would give me the contact information of her church if I would ask, but she basically gave me them all away. And on Saturday I was visiting this local Messianic congregation, and I'm not sure that I really got what they were doing, why most of them were Gentiles, by the way, but they were all wearing tallit and breaking their tongue, trying to speak Hebrew, and I didn't understand that. And I would probably never get back to them, but I had a good excuse, and they definitely invited me to come. I had a good excuse. Tomorrow, I had to leave back to Israel, and I asked somebody's contact back in Israel, and they gave me the number. And when I got back to Israel in a few days, I called this person immediately, and he sounded to me kind of the person who can understand me. Just not just, this kind of you know, whatever you can imagine about being a believer, like speaking, brother, what's going on? How can I help you? That was not part of my life. It was something different. So, and this guy could understand me. I felt it. So I came to this congregation, and I'm making this story pretty short. I'm skipping a lot of funny, interesting details. We don't have time for that. But to make the story short, I came there, I stayed there. God made me to stay there. In a few visits, I figure out that we have Bible study on Sunday in one place. On Wednesday, we have the... on Tuesday, we have had another Bible study in another place. And then on Wednesday, we had the prayer meeting. And I started to go to all of these Bible studies. That's taking into account that I was working nights, night shifts, and sometimes staying through the day. I didn't have my own car. I was riding bike to these Bible studies, taking shower, and then taking notes for everything I was listening to. I was taking notes. When I felt that I'm falling asleep, I was standing up and writing down. Then I was getting home, sleeping for a few more hours, getting back to work. Pretty soon, I felt that I learned something, and then I need to share it with somebody else. And I became pretty vocal about sharing the gospel with others. At some point, I felt that I'm, you know, getting to the, like, I'm in the second half of my third decade, and becoming a believer, not, well, recently, having all kinds of experiences in my life, and I probably need to get more serious and probably get to marry somebody. So I came in front of the congregation and said, brothers and sisters, I have a prayer request. I need a wife. And they reacted the same. So I said, oh, you may laugh as much as you want, but don't forget to pray. And all of them started to pray that God will send me, as I ask, the person whom he prepared for me since the beginning of creation of the universe. And, well, it took some time, but later this lady showed up straight in the congregation, and I'm not sure, well, I'm sure we didn't like each other from the first sight. But I prayed about her, and I was astonished to hear positive answer from the Lord. And don't ask me how I heard it. You know, I remembered, like, that's a long story, but I always prayed about every single female believer I met during this period of time, if it was the God's answer, and I always got the negative, and different ways. And I got so used to it. So then I almost forgot to pray about this girl, and then so she's a believer, she's a single believer, so that's what I'm doing. So, Lord, listen, is it your answer? And it was like, yes. Uh-huh. Well, Lord, I meant that girl, you know, and I'm just like, she had like bright orange hair then, like, you know, pumpkin. I've been like, that orange-haired girl. So, and it was again, yes. And then you got it, you know, like, well, you want it. You do ask for the Lord, you know, just you didn't want to do it with your power. Get it. So, and, well, half year later, we were married. And, you know, I remember we were knowing each other for about 10 days. We came to our pastor and said, well, you know what, we kind of sure that Lord wants us to become husband and wife. He said, so, and then he tried to persuade us to wait for a bit. We said, well, of course we can wait, but, you know, we got the answer from the Lord. So, you know, even if we will wait longer, it wouldn't help. So, but that was quite a funny period. But anyway, we got married. And soon after getting married, we were praying, and God kind of revealed to us that he wants us in a full-time ministry. I was sort of surprised. Well, it's interesting. Of course, I would love to, you know, that would be my lifestyle, to share the gospel with the people. But I didn't know how it may work. The next time I got to the congregation, the president of Chosen People Ministries, the new president, Dr. Mitch Glazer, came to preach in our congregation. Well, our pastor was the local director of the organization, that's why. And after his sermon, he said, well, by the way, if some of you feel that the Lord wants you in a full-time ministry in Israel, talk to me. We have some means to help you to get educated for this ministry. It was in September of 2007. No, 1997. I wish. So I was so young. 1997. In mid of January of 1998, we landed in O'Hare International Airport with the desire, well, and knowledge that we're going to study at Moody Bible Institute to get our education and the perfect knowledge of ABC song. So that was the level of our English. It took about a year and a half to learn English to pass the test in order to get into the American school. My wife unfortunately couldn't study because she got some health issues. And then I got into Moody. And then I started to learn at Moody. And I remember my first semester at Moody, I think it was Christian ethics class or something. The professor was the philosopher. In addition to that, he was of Korean origin and he spoke with a Korean accent. And if it was not enough, he always spoke like that. And God was so good to me. And you know, with the accent, and my English is not perfect. With all my strength, I tried to get what he's talking about. I couldn't get it. In the textbook he gave us to read, I remember every single word which I didn't understand. I was writing with a pencil right above the meaning in Russian. And therefore, at the end, I could understand every single word in this book. I couldn't get the meaning. Just, it was philosophy, which I still hate today. Anyway, somehow, in God's mercy, I got a good grade. And actually, I got all really nice grades. I graduated later, much later, with honors from Moody. But that was far away from that point. I just finished my first year at Moody. And it was not only what we were doing. We were serving, we were kind of building the Russian-speaking congregation in the Russian-Jewish area of Chicago, doing a lot of evangelism, you know, connecting people from different churches, Russian-speaking, basically. And then God decided to bless us because I think it was the right path for us. He said, twins. So after a while of having, you know, wife who was just like, looked like that all the time, you know, I don't think she was able to leave for several months the apartment because she was like totally, when they were sleeping, this rare moment when both of them were sleeping for a short period of time, she was just like, boom, and sleep. You know, and I had to be at school. And I had to do the ministry, and I had to help her, and I had to be a father for these two girls. And I got my first and only C that semester, by the way, at Moody. I felt that something is going to change here. So we prayed, and we decided to get back to Israel. So we spent in Israel 3 years, did a lot of evangelism, did a lot of work, in the congregation. We started the Bible study, which in a few months grew up from 5 of us, including me and my wife, to 25 people from 3 different congregations were coming to the Bible study there. And I had to call pastors from time to time to say, well, by the way, I don't plan to start a new congregation. I don't build on your people. So I hope you don't have anything against that they come once a week to study the Bible with me. They say, oh, no, you're fine. So that was our life there. But the problem was that we were doing it like on a self-support. And we were unemployed. So if I had more time, I would share with you how God showed us his mercies on a daily basis. That we not only survived this 3 years period being you know, having no idea how we're going to feed our kids. In the morning, we didn't know how we're going to feed them in the evening. But they always were not just fed, but well fed. We lived in, not just in a nice, or like had a roof over our head. We had two stories building with a huge territory around it for to live there for free. We were, you know, I can start and, you know, that will take a lot of time. But God was really merciful. But we didn't have money. Like a penny. And then when suddenly God put in my heart that he wants me, I didn't want that, but he wanted me to go back to complete my degree at Moody. Everybody were looking at me, what are you talking about? Like, how are you going to do it? You know, it costs money. And how are you going to fly there? Everybody, including my pastor, he was so against it. Till the same point, he called me once and said, well, come, I need to talk to you. I came to him and he said, yeah, I was praying about you today. I thought, okay, right. And he said, I asked God to show you that you need to find whatever job and start supporting your family. And not dream about, you know, getting away from your problems and like go to the Bible school, whatever. Thinking, okay. And he said, and you know, God answered to me. I said, what did he say? He said, well, if it is not your vision, it doesn't mean that the vision is not from me. And from now on, even if you will decide to change your mind, I will push you there. So, and congregation paid for our tickets to get to the United States. And that's another story how God kept us in the United States before, at that period of time, we were not with Chosen People Ministries. Nobody sent us a monthly check for, you know, food. And we didn't get the food stamps because we're not Americans. Well, two of us were. But I got to Moody Bible Institute. I graduated in 2007 with BA in Jewish studies. The last semester, I was sure that, well, a few more months, I am back to Israel, serving the Lord, doing my best, no studies. Well, in fact, one of professors, by the way, professor of philosophy, I remember him sharing during his class period. He said, well, guys, let me share you something from my life. I was in a seminary and my wife got pregnant. By the way, those of you who are interested in continuing your degree, no children. It will not help you. And I remember sitting in the first row thinking, okay, who cares? I'm not planning to continue my education nor I planning to have children. Next semester, a few months later, I found myself in the classroom in the Trinity Evangelical Divinity School and my wife was pregnant. So another seal of blessing from God. Anyway, it took a few more years. Terrible years, good years. We lived in really under God's merciful hand. I got diagnosed with cancer. It was healed. Well, healed, you know. It was taken away with my kidney, one of my kidneys. So children were growing. We were doing ministry, studying, getting knowledge and everything. And in 2000, well, getting in contact with Chosen People Ministries, starting to raise support for being a missionary in Israel. In 2010, we got back to Israel. We relocated to Jerusalem. We lived then in Jerusalem proper. Now we live just outside of Jerusalem. Few months later, we got sort of communication with other ministry because they had some vision and it was kind of working with our vision to build the food distribution ministry in order to help needy people. I took this opportunity and I organized and still running the food distribution center in Jerusalem. We have five of them all around country, but of course in Jerusalem is the most important one. So through this center, which I'm responsible for, we help to almost 400 families on a monthly basis to get really big food package, you know, which doesn't supposed to save them from starvation because nobody dies from starvation in Israel, neither on Jewish nor on Arab side. Like if you see some like kind of picture of the crying baby with the like tear going through the dusty cheek, which both were made on a probably on a Photoshop. No, it's not true. Nobody is dying from starvation, neither there nor here. But the life is harsh there. The financial situation is really bad. To live in Jerusalem, I have no idea how the elderly people with whom we are working can afford living in Jerusalem. Okay, many of them live in kind of facilities for the elderly people. But still, you know, everything is really expensive and everything is going up and up and up and, you know, we're not following. I remember once my when I started to work there in 2010, my salary was not a bad one comparing to the Israeli kind of median. Right now, I'm almost lower than the median. I mean, getting toward the, okay, can I get the food package? So, well, try not to get there, but anyway, that life is not really easy there. And this package is really helping to these people to make the ends meet. I mean, like, medicine, just getting something in addition to what, you know, to the minimum. Helping their grandchildren, by the way, also helpful. You know, my girls, when we were in the States, I couldn't afford anything for them. Well, I was a student, just lived, you know, barely making my lives. So I said, when we got back and I start to get the paycheck every month, I will send you whatever place you want. And they said, oh, we want ballet. And nice. So I sent them to really good ballet school in Jerusalem. I mean, probably the best one in Israel. And not because I planned to do that, I just accidentally got into that. And it's not the most expensive one, but it's still expensive. We had two, and now we have three, by the way, little ballerinas. So, and I learned how much I should pay for that. I thought, okay, let's think. I like promise. Pinky promises, you know. So, and my mom, I remember, my mom who lives exactly the same way as most of these needy people live, you know, and the same amounts of money she receives from the government and pays for her little something they call apartment. And she said, well, so how much is that? I said, such and such. She's like, okay, I think I will pay. And I look at her, like, mom, just, like, frankly, how are you going to do that? Where are you going to get this money? I will pay it myself somehow. And then, you know, like in the movies about the twisters coming, you know, like, or just like tornadoes, like black cloud and lightnings and, you know, all of this, you know, getting really dark and dangerous. And she goes, what did you say? You want to prevent me to pay for my girls? I said, no, mom. That's fine. You know, well, come on. How many of you have grandchildren? Yeah. What circumstances can prevent you for like getting something for them? You know, are you ready to kill their parents if they would stand like that? You know, no, you don't gonna give them that. So, I mean, like, seriously, that's the parents. And when we help them with these food packages, believe it or not, if it not saves their lives, it even provides for them this opportunity, a little opportunity to help their grandchildren, like to give some presents, to help their families. They need to feel that they bring something. But, okay, I'm helping them, so what else? What can I do with that? Well, I need to share the gospel. But I can't share the gospel in exchange for material goods. That's against the law in Israel. What am I going to do? So I decided to be myself. And my, like, we spoke with those who decided to help me, volunteers, and we prayed about it. Every time, by the way, we open the doors, we pray for the people will be blessed, for we will be blessed, that the Lord, Lord will be visual through us to these people, and somehow it started to work. And we are not the only organization who helps needy people in Israel, even in Jerusalem, but they said some of them were getting like some help at some point. This organization, that organization, even from Christian organizations, when they come to us, they said, guys, it's incredibly nice to be here. That's nice environment. We know that you are interested in us, in our lives. Why do you do that? I said, well, we are Jewish people who believe in the Jewish Messiah, Yeshua. And they, okay, so why? Well, because we believe in Jewish Messiah Yeshua, we read the Bible and we take it pretty carefully and seriously. And it's written that we, if we believe in God of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob, we have to take care of the those who are in need. And that's why we do it. Soon, some people started to come and tell us, well, guys, you know what, we don't want to get the package today, it's not our time today, but we want you to pray for this and for that issue. Great, sure, we'll do. Then I had an opportunity to invite the group of people from those who receive packages to the Bible studies. So we, about 2 years ago, I started the Bible studies in our main office every Wednesday. First time one person came, then the second person came, then three people came. And then it's not a huge Bible study, but sometimes we can get up to 25 people. And from the beginning, there were elderly people who have a lot of time. So, well, anyway, with all of this, some of them take three buses to get to that place. So I have to drive them back home afterwards when it gets darker. But now we have people with children. Some of them, not many of them, but we still have, like, you know, I have one lady who is the single mother of seven. Welcome to the pastorhood. You get some interesting issues in front of you. So, once I asked the people, I'm about to get to the break right now, but few more minutes. I was asking people how passed the week, what happened during the week. And this lady kind of silent said, I got baptized. I said, what? I got baptized. I'm like, what? I got baptized. I'm like, how in the world? Well, her daughter, she's attending my Bible study. Her daughter had a friend who was going to the well-established congregation in Jerusalem. And this friend got baptized. And she invited her friend and their friend's mom came together, and they were pretty happy to witness this baptism. And then the pastor, and I know the pastor, and I had no idea that he can do such things because of his ways, he suddenly, really surprisingly, said, maybe somebody else wants to get baptized today. And she said, I do. And then she said, he started to examine her in front of all these people. Many questions. And she said, I was like kind of thinking about everything you were teaching us. And I was giving the answers. And I passed. And he baptized me. Praise the Lord. So that was the first fruit. 2 months ago, I had a privilege to get with a 75 years old Holocaust survivor. The lady who, in the age of 5 years, she was 5 years old. She got with her mom into Bergen-Belsen concentration camp in Czechoslovakia. So she went out there. She came to Israel. She had some experience with different kinds of Christians in her life. She started to come to my Bible study. She was the second person who came there. And I was able to baptize her in the name of Father, Son, and the Holy Spirit in the River of Jordan. So this little Bible study, which began from the food distribution ministry, which goes not, you know, that's for you, that's for me. Like, just, you know, the opportunity to letting us be in ourselves. Meaning that we're supposed to be light of God. We're supposed to be salt of the land here. So we're trying to be, and we got fruits. So that's basically where we are now. I hope this group will grow up a little bit more. Well, I actually hope that I will be able, recent future, to concentrate more on the teaching ministry. You know, I already was able to build this food distribution ministry. I have people who can, like, I'm not there for this point for almost 2 weeks. I'm going to spend another week here in the States. And it's running. It's well. And people know that they will get there. Well, I have to write a few emails here and there to make sure that everything works. But it may work even when I do something else. And I do feel that God wants me more in the teaching ministry. And hopefully after the break, you will be able to get some, you know, hopefully benefits out of this gift, which I believe I have. So let's have 10 minutes break. Okay, now it's 3:00.